Page 202, Chapter 8, Missouri After the Civil War. The Civil War divided Missourians. Neighbors fought against neighbors, friends against friends, and brothers against brothers. The war damaged the state's economy and interrupted the state's growth and progress. With the war over, could Missourians put their feelings behind them? What would freedom bring the former slaves? Page 204, Missouri Close-Up. Missouri's population, 1860 versus 1870. White, 1860, 952,150. 1870, 1,603,224. Free Black, 1860, 3,572. 1870, 118,071. Slaves, 1860, 114,931. 1870, 0. Total, 1860, 1,067,081. 1870, 1,721,295. Growth of Missouri's railroads from 1852 to 1892. Year, 1852. Miles of rails, 5. 1862, 838. 1872, 2,673. 1882, 4,501. 1892, 6,404. Page 205, Figure 17, Timeline, 1865 to 1875. 1865, New Constitution written. 1866, Lincoln Institute founded. 1870, School of Mines created. 1873, first publicly funded kindergarten started in St. Louis. Page 206, Section 1, Building Again. As you read, look for the following. How the people of Missouri came together after the Civil War. What the former slaves faced in freedom. The changes in the state's culture and education. Vocabulary terms: Reconstruction, Freedmen, Test Oath, Discrimination, Racism, Freedmen's Bureau, Tenant Farmer, Suffrage, Segregate. The time after the Civil War is called Reconstruction. The word Reconstruction means building again. Missourians did indeed have to build again. Their homes and farms, their towns, their roads, and their government. Rebuilding the state government. Even before the war ended, a new state government had been elected. It was led by a political group called the Radicals. One meaning of the word radical is a person who acts harshly. The Radicals were people who opposed slavery and who thought those who supported slavery were responsible for the war and should be punished. The first thing the Radicals did was write a new state constitution and laws abolishing slavery. The 1865 Constitution had many new ideas that encouraged economic growth and gave people more say in how their state was run. Page 207. But while the new Constitution outlawed slavery, it did not give freedmen, the former slaves, equal rights. They still could not vote or hold government office. The new document punished the former Confederates and people who had supported the Confederacy. It stopped them from voting or holding office. They also could not become lawyers, teachers, or ministers. The Constitution required the rest of Missourians to take a test oath, swearing that they had never supported the Confederacy. The test oath and other punishments in the Constitution led to hard feelings. Some former Confederates even felt unwelcome in their home state. This feeling and the hard economic times after the war led some of the former Confederates to become outlaws, robbing banks and holding up trains. In some parts of the state, people took the law into their own hands, arresting and punishing people without giving them trials. Life after slavery. For those who had been slaves, the Civil War brought freedom, but it also left them with no homes, no land, and no jobs. The freedmen were largely unwelcome in Missouri. They were driven from some areas by threats of death or serious harm. The freedmen found that life after slavery was little better than before. In some ways, it was worse. Many of them no longer had a place to live or work. Many remained on the farms where they had been slaves, working for little or no wages. Others moved to the towns and cities. There, they found only low-paying jobs as servants or laborers. They faced restrictions or barriers on where they were allowed to live. There was discrimination in other areas of their lives. Discrimination is unequal and unfair treatment that denies people their rights because of their race, sex, religion, or any other reason. Much discrimination is rooted in racism, a belief that one's own race is better than all others. Page 208. The federal government tried to help. It had started the Freedmen's Bureau in 1865. This organization provided food, clothing, medical care, and other help to former slaves. In Missouri, it also served as a go-between for black laborers and former slave owners who could no longer farm without slave labor. The Freedmen's Bureau, largely through the efforts of James Milton Turner, also helped start schools for the former slaves and their children. Many blacks found themselves working for white farmers as tenant farmers in ways that were not much different from slavery. The white landowner gave the tenant farmer a place to live, seed for crops, and tools to work the land. Sometimes the landowner paid the tenant farmer a wage. The tenant farmer might receive a part of the money earned when the crops were sold. Did you know? The Freedmen's Bureau established a branch of the National Freedmen's Savings and Trust Company, a bank, in St. Louis in 1868. Page 209. The lives of tenant farmers, many of whom were white, were only a little better than those of slaves. Their houses were usually shacks. There was so little money that the tenant farmer's family often dressed in rags and went hungry. The children rarely went to school because they needed to work in the fields. Meanwhile, African Americans in Missouri were helping themselves. After the Civil War, they organized the Missouri Equal Rights League to work for suffrage, the right to vote. When the 15th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was finally approved in 1870, African American men gained the right to vote. Women, black or white, still could not vote in most elections. During this time, many black people left Missouri. Some moved to larger cities in the East where there were more jobs. Some moved to unsettled lands in Kansas and other western states. Still others started their own settlements in Missouri. Three such towns were Eldridge in Laclede County, Three Creeks in Boone County, and Pennington in Saline County. Only Eldridge remains as a town today. The church at Pennington has been restored and is on the National Register of Historic Places. Three Creeks is now a conservation area. Blacks and whites remained segregated or separated by race. They sat in separate sections of churches or went to separate churches altogether. They lived in separate parts of town. Their children went to separate schools. Page 210, Spotlight, Settling in Missouri. It is not unusual to walk into a store today and see signs in both English and Spanish. As more and more people from Central and South America move to Missouri, businesses are adding signs in two languages to attract and help Spanish-speaking customers. At another time in Missouri's history, it would not have been unusual to see signs in German, or to be able to buy a German language newspaper, or to hear a sermon in church in German. In the 19th century, people from Germany were the fastest growing group of immigrants resettling in Missouri. Not too long after Missouri became a state in 1821, a German immigrant named Gottfried Duden bought land in Warren County along the Missouri River. He wrote a book about Missouri, describing it as being a lot like Germany. Poverty and a lack of freedom in Germany led a number of Germans to believe Duden's description of Missouri, even though he exaggerated a lot. Between 1830 and 1860, more than 80,000 Germans came to Missouri. Many of the newcomers bought farms. Others settled in St. Louis. Still others started towns, such as Herman, in 1837. They started wineries, opened gunsmith and sausage-making shops, and went to work for breweries. They brought with them new ideas about farming and education, including kindergarten, and strong beliefs, including opposition to slavery. German language newspapers and sermons in German started to fade away after the United States entered the First World War against Germany and its allies. German-speaking Americans wanted to prove they were loyal to their new country, and they began speaking only English, at least in public. At the same time that large numbers of Germans were moving to Missouri, a slightly smaller group of immigrants were coming from Ireland to escape famine and poverty. Hundreds of thousands of Irish immigrants came to this country, and more than 40,000 of them came to Missouri. Most of them settled in cities like St. Louis, St. Joseph, and Kansas City. Some tried to farm in southern Missouri, and many went to work building railroads. Missouri has seen waves of immigrants from other countries throughout its history. In the early 20th century, many Italians made their way to Missouri. In St. Louis, they established a neighborhood called The Hill that is still home to many Italian restaurants, groceries, and bakeries, and where Italian is still spoken in some homes. Kansas City also has its Little Italy. Smaller numbers of immigrants from countries in Eastern Europe, especially Poland and Czechoslovakia, also came to Missouri. Most recently, Missouri has seen groups of refugees from South Vietnam, Bosnia, Serbia, Sudan, Sierra Leone, and Somalia. Many of the immigrant groups who have come to Missouri have had to overcome discrimination from the people already here. Their different languages, customs, and beliefs were not always understood, and the people already here were sometimes afraid of the newcomers. In most cases, the discrimination took the form of not hiring the newcomers or not letting them live where they desired. but in the case of one group, the discrimination turned violent. In the early 1800s, members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, sometimes called Mormons or Saints, moved from New York to Northwest Missouri. The Mormons ended up settling in Caldwell County. People in neighboring counties tried to force them to leave. The Mormons' different religious beliefs led to misunderstandings that sometimes turned violent. Both sides raided the farms and towns of the other, burning buildings and fields of crops. People were sometimes killed in what has been called the Mormon War. In 1838, the governor ordered the state militia to exterminate, kill, or drive the Mormons from Missouri. Realizing their situation was hopeless against the state of Missouri, the 15,000 Mormons surrendered, giving up all their property before migrating to western Illinois. You can visit a historic marker at Far West, the site in Caldwell County where the Mormons surrendered. Page 212. Education. Before the war, education for blacks was against the law. After the war, schools for blacks were started in many communities. The state provided funding, money, for schools, either white or black, and for the University of Missouri, founded in 1839, for the first time in 1866. The first publicly funded kindergarten in the United States was started in St. Louis in 1873 by Susan Blow. State funding for education was one of the new ideas the radicals had included in the 1865 Constitution. To train teachers for white schools, the state opened teachers' colleges in Kirksville, now Truman State University, and Warrensburg, now the University of Central Missouri. Later, another teachers' college was started in Cape Girardeau, now Southeast Missouri State University. Black teachers were trained at Lincoln Institute, a college started in 1866 in Jefferson City by black Civil War veterans. It later became a state school and is now Lincoln University. Schools in the cities were usually brick buildings, sometimes two or three stories high. Few of them had a gymnasium or a cafeteria. Physical education was not part of the lessons. Children went home for lunch. Schools in rural areas were often wood frame buildings in which grades 1 through 8 met in one room. In some parts of southern Missouri, the schools were made of logs and had dirt floors. The students sat on benches. Page 213. Rural schools only met a few months of the year, because the children were needed to work on the farm most of the time. Teachers in rural schools were sometimes just older girls who had finished the eighth grade. Because it was often a long walk or horse ride from farm to school, the students brought their lunches to school in pails. A number of private schools also started in Missouri after the Civil War. Many parts of Missouri did not have high schools after the war. Boys often went to work when they finished the eighth grade. Girls were not expected to work outside the home. A town or a church might start a school called an academy, where girls learned housekeeping, cooking, nursing, and sewing. The girls at an academy might also learn to play the piano. Sometimes the academy had religious classes. Often, the academy became a junior college when a high school was finally built in the town. Cultural activities. Better public education encouraged many people to improve other parts of their lives. A number of communities started libraries. Other communities built lecture halls and concert halls. People in the towns could go to the halls to hear speeches and music, to see plays, and even to watch circus acts. Missourians had fun at such sports as ice skating, bike riding, hunting, fishing, horse racing, and a new sport, baseball. There were also steamboat races on the Mississippi River. The first county fair west of the Mississippi had been held in Boone County in 1835. After the Civil War, county fairs became very popular. Farmers would show off their best animals and crops. Merchants from town would show off their goods, and there would be demonstrations of farming and ranching skills. There would be food and treats and entertainment for the whole family. Did you know? Former teachers' colleges, such as Southeast Missouri State University, were once called normal schools. The term comes from the French name for a teacher's school, École Normale, which means model school in English. The schools had model classrooms and model teachers demonstrating the model or best ways to teach. Page 214. Religion became even more important to Missourians after the Civil War. Church membership grew as more ministers settled in the state. The number of churches in Missouri doubled in the first decade, a period of 10 years, after the war to more than 3,000. Missouri's natural beauty and life on the frontier inspired a number of artists and writers living in Missouri. One famous painter was George Caleb Bingham. He painted scenes of life along the Missouri River near his home in Arrow Rock, as well as portraits of famous people. Perhaps the most famous writer of the period was Samuel Clemens, who was better known as Mark Twain. Clemens was born in the small Missouri village of Florida, but he grew up in Hannibal. Many of his stories, such as Tom Sawyer and The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, were about growing up and working on the Mississippi River. A famous poet after the Civil War was Eugene Field. This newspaper reporter, born in St. Louis, wrote poetry for children. Among his poems were Little Boy Blue and Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod. Do you remember? Number 1. What was the Reconstruction period? Number 2. How were blacks and whites segregated in Missouri?